I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Avery Mandeville of Little Hag. Little Hag released the album Now That's What I Call Little Hag in 2024 via Bar None Records. In this conversation, Mandeville discusses how a trip to Durham, North Carolina, during which she wrote a song a day, helped shape this new record, whether she's ever been concerned about incorporating humor into her songs, and how the eclectic material on Now That's What I Call Little Hag still forms a cohesive record. That's on Into Music, coming up now. When it came time for this album, what, you know, are you somebody who's kind of specifically setting time aside to write for an album, or is this just like constantly writing? At some point I get 10 songs and those seem to me that they're going to be cohesive and become a record.
I would say that's usually how I go about it, is like writing in drips and drabs, and then I take my favorites of the batch and say, all right, it's been a while since we put something out, let's work on the next thing. But this record, I went down to Durham, North Carolina with my best friend Noah. He's got a project called Wormy, and he plays drums for Samia and Willow Avalon and a bunch of people. But him and I, he had a month off touring, and I had just gotten out of a relationship and wanted to get out of town a little bit. And he was like, let's go down to Durham and hang out with our friends and write a song every day, which I had never like properly sat down with that intention for that length of time ever. So of the 30-ish songs that we wrote that month, there's like seven of them that are on this record. Seven wound up being good enough, I think, to make the cut. So that was a cool little experiment, because I don't know, I think the idea that you have to like be hit over the head with inspiration and songwriting just like happens to you is kind of, I used to think that was real, but now it kind of feels a little bit like bullshit. Like songwriting is a muscle and you have to like flex it.
Tell me about that process of like writing something every day, because over 30 days, not everything is going to hit, but then you're going to have maybe a run of 3 days or something, right? Where there's big surprises.
Yeah. The first few days were most lucrative because I felt like I had stuff to say. By the end, I was like, oh God, I have nothing left to say. I've said everything I ever thought. There were some days where I wound up writing two songs, and like, because I started writing something that wasn't working out, and then I accidentally wound up writing something better. But it was cool. I really enjoyed doing it. I think I need to be kind of giving myself a challenge or putting myself into a situation like that in order to be productive, because I go through lulls. I'm in one now. I haven't written a song in like over a year at this point. I'll go through kind of lull periods. So I think I'm due at the moment for a sit down and write a song every day for a week or something, you know?
When you're in the process of that, writing something every day, does that also free you up to, if something shows up and it's like, you know, this is not a song, type of song I would normally write, but I've got nothing to lose, so I'm just going to pursue this.
Yeah, I think that can be a really helpful like songwriting tool as well, to like go outside of your comfort zone. I was doing a songwriting challenge in early 2020 when everyone was cooped up. My friend Rick Barry, he's a really great musician, sent out an email blast every week of like, okay, this is your challenge, everyone's challenge. And it was all over the place. Like write something 160 BPM, write something on an instrument that's not your main instrument. So I like got out a little dinky keyboard. I don't know how to play it, but I was working with that. And I think putting yourself in different headspaces is really a great tool to like come up with something new.
You mentioned too that it's really been like a year since you've written something. You know, I write a lot of prose and things like that. And there are times where I finish writing something and there's, I don't know if it's anxiety, but there's this feeling of like, okay, well, that's finished. When's the next one going to show up? And it's like this terror of like, I know it's going to show up, but I don't know when it's going to happen. And then I don't know if it's going to be any good, right?
Yeah. I do feel a little bit, I'm feeling like that myself lately because I'm in a very like happy and stable relationship and in a happy place in my life that is like, I guess a little bit uncommon. It's a very unchaotic sort of like nice time for me right now, which is not really leading to like the usual heartache type of songs, you know, that I tend to write. Yeah, it's a weird feeling of like everything is so nice. So like, where am I supposed to draw from? Because being earnest about like happy things is very hard for me. I either have to make it a joke or it has to be dark, you know?
Yeah, that's a thing, right? That sense of like, I'm happy. Am I supposed to trust this? And if I say something positive about it, perhaps I'll jinx it.
Yes. Yep.
Well, that's no fun. So, I'm also curious about that too, because obviously humor is an element of your writing, and that's humor is also not something that's always easy to convey. So, I mean, do you kind of struggle with that ever? Like, will people get this? Will they understand that?
I don't think I don't really ever think to myself like, are people gonna like this? Because like, if I like it, that's good enough for me, really. And like, if I like it, I know someone else is gonna like it because I like it and I'm kind of like particular. But yeah, I guess the humor comes through because it's a way to like shoehorn in a darker topic or difficult topic, and make a difficult topic accessible. Or even just approachable. Like I don't feel there are topics in my life that don't feel I don't feel like there's a way for me to joke about it yet. And that's probably why I haven't gone there. But it feels like punching up to talk about like shithead men or like, you know, the billionaires of the world. Like that's an easy it's an easy target. So it's easy to bring humor into that. And I think people just like people want to be entertained. They want to like have fun, even if it is a difficult topic type of theme. Like you want to entertain people, you want to keep them guessing and keep them like engaged. And humor is like a great way to do that.
You mentioned something too there about having certain topics that you weren't sure about yet. And I wonder too if sometimes as a writer there is an inclination to just say, not everything has to go in a song. There has to be some things that I just keep for myself,
Yeah.
maybe for better or worse. I don't know.
It does feel like unexplored territory that might be worth engaging with. I also have kind of a, my mentality is sort of like I write it and then I bring it to the, if it's good enough, I bring it to the band and then we record it and then it's out in the world. Like I kind of know going in that things are probably going to be public, but I guess I could just like go in with the mindset of like, this can just be for me. I don't have to share it and see what that yields, you know?
When it came time to making the record, you used different producers on different things. Tell me about that decision, because there is that, I think, thought sometimes that, a producer should be there, start to finish, oversee the whole thing. It'll be inconsistent if you change something. But I think here you came up with something that was cohesive, but obviously you had reasons for using different producers.
The cohesion, I guess, kind of comes from like I wrote all the songs, so they all sound like Little Hex songs because of that. But the choice to do all the different producers was kind of just like out of necessity of like time and money. We only had certain days in the studio booked. We weren't trying to go overboard with the budget, so it became like an easier option of I send over my little acoustic demo or whatever demo I've made to one of my friends who's a producer. And they get to like work on it either separately of me or with me sitting in. So it's not the whole, it's not getting the whole band into the studio. About half of the songs was getting the band in the studio, and then the other half was like, you're my buddy, take this song. I trust you to make it cool. And that's how we wound up with like really diverse sounding stuff. And then John Marshall Smith, who was the who mixed and mastered the record, was really, really I was talking to him every day for months, like getting everything in order because it was such an undertaking to make all these crazy random songs work.
That was one of my other questions, was the sequencing of it. So was that a kind of prolonged process? Like, how am I going to fit this all together?
Because the songs were all over the place, I didn't have an album order intention at all. And I was like, this is all so random. Like, what is going to make this make sense? And I'm never really sure if I like did it the right way. I was tinkering with it up until like submission day. Like, all right, how do you actually want this to line up? There was just also, I'm sure every artist says this, that they like love every song on the record, but like there was just so many songs that I was like, this is too good to be on like side B. Like, people aren't even going to get there. Maybe you people are only going to listen to the first few. So like, I don't want to put the heaviest hitters all up top and then leave everything else a little bit more of a bummer or disappointing, but I don't want to. It's hard to figure out a sequence. And I don't even know that I did it right, but I love the record. I love how it came out.
And I think that diversity, it's funny because I listened to it and then it was only, I don't know, recently that I looked at the actual running time and I was like, huh, it's like 35 minutes. But I feel like I've absorbed so much more than that in the time that it goes by, you know?
Well, thanks. I love a short song. I feel like this is definitely like sacrilege or something, but like songs should be 2 minutes or 3 minutes. Like, not all songs, but most of the time, like I write like verse, chorus type of stuff. It's like anything, we don't need too much fluff or too much other stuff in there because I want to get in and get out and make it the most like impactful 3 minutes rather than, you know, something that I don't want you to ever lose interest.
Well, and I mean, there's like, I think about like old country songs or even, you know, a lot of the Beatles material. And it's like, I don't know how often the Beatles cracked 4 minutes in a song, you know?
It's true.
Yeah.
I also love the title of the album, of course. and when I first heard it, I was telling a coworker, I'm like, oh, you really like this record. And I told him the title. And of course, he got a laugh out of it. But I'm guessing there's also kind of like a serious side to it of like, is this also a statement like, this is where we're at and this is like us now?
It was kind of many, many things led to the title. I first thought of it and was just like, that's fucking funny. Like, that's funny. I was going on online and seeing like how often has this been done and how like have there been any like really big artists that have done this, because I don't want to like be too, you know, rip anything off, but it just seemed, well, it is a rip off, but it just seemed funny to me. And the Now CDs I grew up with, they really like informed my taste a lot. Like Now 5, 6, and 7, when I was like 5, 6, and 7, that was the peak. Like that was all of those like early aughts pop and R&B songs like were very influential to me. But it's also our own kind of compilation record because of the many producers thing. So it's like a Little Hag sampler. I didn't know when I was saying the idea to some friends, they're like, oh, that's really funny. Then I was a little bit nervous that it like wouldn't connect with younger people. Cause I was like, do people still like even know what that is? I don't know. But I think enough people get it, I think.
You've been listening to a conversation with Avery Mandeville of Little Hag. The latest Little Hag record is Now That's What I Call Little Hag. You can learn more about the band at littlehag.com. Our digital producers are Carly Cooper, Beth Golay, and Hugo Fan. Our theme music is composed and performed by Torin Anderson. You can learn more about this podcast at kmuw.org, and we do welcome your questions and comments via info@kmuw.org. Thanks for listening. We will see you next time.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.